Emerald Podcast Series. Research that makes a difference.
Welcome to the Emerald Podcast Series. I'm your host, Tom Shields, Communications Manager at Emerald Publishing. Today, we're joined by returning guests, Gordon Smith and Sai Islam. Gordon and Sai are leadership experts and their latest book, Avatar, The Last Airbender, Elements of Leadership, explores leadership through the lens of, you guessed it, the popular show Avatar. In this episode, we dive into why Avatar provides such a rich source of leadership insight, what the research and writing process looked like, and what it's really like to collaborate on a project like this. We also explore how themes like balance, harmony, and identity from the show can help leaders navigate today's increasingly polarized world. Whether you're a fan of Avatar or just curious about better leadership, it's a fascinating discussion, so let's get stuck in. So Gordon and Sai, it's been around 3 years since you last joined us on the Emerald Podcast Series. When you were last on, you were talking about your book, Leaders Assemble, which is all about leadership lessons from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You revealed then that you were working on a new book with lessons from Avatar, The Last Airbender. That book has since been published. So my first question to you today is, why Avatar?
I think the real answer is because I wanted to write about it. Isn't that right, Gordon? It was my fault.
You engaged in leadership to influence us to write a book. Yes, I agree.
Yeah. I think between the two of us, I'm the bigger Avatar The Last Airbender fan. And I have watched the show multiple times. And there's a, you know, kind of a big fan base that has looked at Avatar The Last Airbender from multiple perspectives, mostly in terms of who should date whom. That's been the biggest area of conversation, starting with the hot take, right, Gordon? So we got to make everybody angry right from the beginning. But that's like a big part of the fandom, but also kind of the philosophy of the show, the moral consciousness of the show. And so I can really see, a lot of leadership potential. And then Gordon, you know, I think you agreed with me based on some reflection. And we really think that especially this show, I'd been using it to teach some leadership concepts, specifically around things like stress and burnout and team cohesion. And it seemed like a natural fit after the Marvel Cinematic Universe book to say like, oh, we can write a really cool book about Avatar The Last Airbender.
Yeah. And I do think one of the things I really like with it is it's very different from the Marvel Universe type stuff. And so we've got kind of a different kind of setup. There's a lot more cross-culturalism. There's kind of these ideas of balance. And so this stuff really, like, it feels different to me than the Marvel Cinematic Universe we did. And so it represented kind of an opportunity to look at different aspects of leadership as opposed to just take the old ones and that we used in Marvel and just do them again. This seemed more interesting to me, at least.
What you're alluding to there is, you know, that idea of Avatar being known for its themes of balance and harmony. And can you talk a little bit, maybe we'll start with you, Gordon, a little bit about that idea of how these lessons can inform effective leadership?
Yeah. And so, you know, I think with Avatar, we've got these people sort of almost martial artist type kind of concentration, really thinking about kind of getting in touch with yourself or your abilities and growing them over time, which is what we should generally be doing in the real world. And I think one of the things that kind of sometimes gets missed when we're talking about leadership is we look at CEOs, we look at presidents, sometimes we look at, you know, famous people, and we're like, wow, this person has a lot of influence. It must be they were just born this way or just magically appeared, which is couldn't be further from the truth. To be a good leader, you need to work on it. You need to have self-awareness related to it. It's a skill-based process over time. And so I think that's one of the things I do like with Avatar and thinking about balance and thinking about kind of self-awareness related things is that that's what you really need to be a good leader. It's not just that you're born that way or it happens easily. It really is something you have to work at and develop. And, you know, that certainly is something in Avatar: The Last Airbender and Legend of Korra is you have people that are learning a skill, that are getting better while also dealing with complex situations, dealing with people with very different perspectives and goals. And that's a lot closer to the way that the real world is. People are all over the place on things. Things don't always come easily to us. And in fact, you know, most people, and especially our students, they're going to school, but also have to work at the same time, have to have a family, have to live a life. And so there's a need for balance. There's not an ability to just spend, you know, 18 hours a day on leadership and then go to sleep, right? And so I think that those are things that I think with Avatar: The Last Airbender, and looking at the different elements, this idea that they should be in balance, and that part of the problem with the world of Avatar: The Last Airbender is that, you know, the Fire Nation, this firepower, has kind of caused things to be out of balance between these different tribes, these different people, and the world has suffered because of it.
Sticking with that theme of balance, Sai, how can modern leaders foster balance in what, you know, is a very polarized environment at the moment in the world?
Well, I think one of the big things is really focusing in on both personal balance and, you know, balance in actions, and then balance in terms of teams. So what that means is having a sense of, you know, are you as an individual leader, are you internally balanced? Are you understanding what it is that, you know, is in front of you? Can you evaluate things in a kind of fair and reasonable way? Then can you actually treat your team members fairly? Can you use leadership techniques kind of effectively? And so one of the things we talk about in the book is that you can boil leadership down to kind of task-focused stuff and relationship-oriented stuff if you wanted to just, you know, break it into just two big chunks. And you have to find a balance between those two things. If you're too task-focused and not relationship-focused enough, you know, sure, you might be able to get things done, but people on your team may not be happy. And they may not want to work with you, and they may not stay. If you're too relationship focused, then all of a sudden the task stuff can fall by the wayside. Maybe you're not getting the work done because you're too focused on maintaining friendships and being friends with everyone. So finding those areas of balance is I think, really important. And Avatar especially exhibits a lot of those elements because, you know, the characters in the show, they have to balance those personal relationships and the mission. They have to make decisions where, okay, what kind of, you know, what am I willing to sacrifice to accomplish this goal that we happen to have? And we see different examples of that throughout the show. You know, so for example, you might see an unbalanced leader like the character of Jet, who extremely charismatic, but is willing to go and take some really morally questionable actions, like destroying a whole village to win against the Fire Nation. And so you can see that this character is out of balance. And it's really a really interesting idea for, I think, our readers to kind of reflect on, oh, the Avatar is trying to achieve balance, but he also sees these other characters that are out of balance. And I think it allows them the opportunity to really reflect on how they themselves can remain in balance. And then from an organizational level, you have leaders that can start to reflect on, well, am I leading my entire organization in the right direction? Am I going too far in trying to manage relationships in my executive team and throughout the organization and not focusing enough on the work? Or am I keeping everybody too focused on mission without really managing relationships both inside and outside of the organization?
You know, I don't think that you have to necessarily be interested in the show to appreciate the book at all. But the question that I kind of want to ask, maybe we go back to Gordon for this one, is what kind of leader is the book for?
So to my mind, you know, when Sai and I think about leadership in the general sense, we are really thinking about everyone engages in leadership in their lives. You don't need to be a manager. You don't need to have that official role. And so to me, it's kind of open to everybody it works for, because all of us have to influence people. If you have kids, you got to try to influence them towards good choices. If you have friends, you might try to influence them, whether it's for good choices or what movie you're going to go see. And I think with the book, we try to make it something where we're having people think about their lives and what they're doing, rather than just, oh, you're the CEO of Apple, so therefore you're doing this. We really try to keep it at that level where these examples can apply to anyone. And I think it's something that, you know, that's important, as well as empowering people, is that we all have impact on the world in ways big and small. But oftentimes we don't necessarily think about that aspect. And so to me, yeah, I think this is a book that we've tried to make readable for, you know, any, you know, a large percentage of people, up to, you know, sort of older children, teenagers could be reading this book. You know, so I think it's kind of, we really tried to make this, how do we take these things that are empirically supported, that sometimes are published in journal articles that aren't, you know, perfectly understandable to any human being, and really make them into something that anyone could say, hey, I see that going on in Avatar, The Last Airbender. I understand that example, and I see how that might help when I'm trying to get my kids to do the laundry, or trying to get my team to work on this project. Or if I'm a CEO, how do I lead my whole organization through a change? You know, we really think it's something that applies in all those very different leadership contexts.
And Si, you kind of mentioned earlier about the book being used in sort of group settings. So how do you envision the book being used in, say, educational or organizational settings?
So we'll start with, educational settings, because that's where Gordon and I started thinking about the book. And, you know, in class, luckily the show is, each episode is about 22 minutes long, so we can show an entire episode, of the show and ask students to reflect on it. One of my favorite episodes to show is one called The Chase, where the characters are being chased pretty relentlessly. The gang, as they're called, are being chased pretty relentlessly by Azula and her team. And they basically, the gang, you know, Sokka, Aang, Katara, and Toph, they don't get sleep over a long period of time. And they are having conflict. And so it's a really great way to talk about conflict and a lack of physical resources, the impact that has on people. And so for students, you know, I can talk about stress and burnout and pressure in a corporate setting. And for a lot of my undergrads and even some of my graduate students, they have a hard time maybe conceptualizing what that looks like in an organizational setting. But in watching the show, they can relate to each of the characters. They can understand how that works. And it helps them to create that relationship. In an applied context, if we're running a teamwork training, or if I'm doing some executive coaching, one of the things that I find is that sometimes team members and leaders, they get really caught up in their stuff. They're really caught up in, I have this conflict with Bob. I have this issue with Brenda. I have this concern that my leader isn't fulfilling. But if you let them watch the show, then what happens is it creates this space where they can have conversations about what's happening to the characters. And then the challenge is, can you bring those lessons back into the workplace? And so, and it doesn't work with every workplace, every organization. They have to really be open to having that conversation. And there's a lot of pre-work that you have to do to kind of set the, set the tone for what the training is going to look like and what that facilitation is going to look like. But when they get it, they really get it. A funny example of this is I gave a presentation at, Farmingdale State College about the book to a combination of like administrators, other faculty, and students. And what I found was really interesting. I showed almost an entire episode of Avatar The Last Airbender. This was the episode where Jet makes his first appearance. And I was a little worried. You know, if you know anything about college administrators, they might be a little stuffy. My undergrads, I wasn't as concerned about. I wasn't 100% sure that my other faculty members would be into it. But what I found was that even faculty members or administrators that had never seen the show before, they were really into it. They were kind of like, oh, this is cool. I can see what's happening in you know, in the leadership behavior here. And I specifically, we talked about toxic leadership and how to identify when there's a toxic leader or somebody who's using charisma in the wrong way. And you could see that everybody from undergraduates to seasoned college administrators to other faculty were kind of like, oh, this is cool. I can't believe that I can see what you just talked about in terms of bad leadership. I can see it in the show, and now I can reflect on it, and maybe I can see it in my day-to-day life.
Just to shift gears a little bit, you know, aside from watching episodes of Avatar, can you talk me through the research process and what's involved to create a project like this?
Sure. You know, I think kind of that first step is kind of thinking about, you know, obviously looking into the research, understanding leadership in a general sense, understanding some of these concepts. And then, you know, I think what's great actually about writing these books is you learn a lot from it. So for instance, in this book, I was writing the chapter we did on ethics in the book, which is very interesting and brought up some interesting kind of thinking about characters in there. You know, it's kind of a weird thing. We do this stuff. We're focused on the leadership aspect. We ultimately end up with kind of the hot takes of characters and their behaviors and how we should see them as well. But essentially, this chapter on ethics, what I did was, yes, I've read stuff on ethics. Yes, I know about ethical leadership in the general sense, but it involved looking into the literature in more depth. Okay, what are some different ethical models we have? What are some ways we look at ethics? And so digging into review articles, using that to kind of springboard into, okay, these are things we want to look at is a big part of it. And then of course, as you kind of, to me, it's like you read research and when you're writing a book like this and you're like, huh, that is kind of like this character or this type of situation. And that, so they kind of feed off each other, the series and your knowledge and bringing in new literature, new research that you kind of find. Because you'll say, hey, I got this part of it, but this scene also has this element that's pretty interesting. I wonder if someone's done research that's looked at that type of aspect. And so I think that's some of the fun of it. And I do think, you know, when we look at research, being creative and thinking things through and coming up with new ideas is a big part of it. And so by bringing that pop culture in, it really brings a new angle of somebody to think about, to consider, okay, how does this really work out? And that's one thing that kind of came out through the ethics chapter a little bit, was looking at this situation in Avatar where, you know, this Fire Lord that basically ruined the balance of things, the Avatar at that time didn't really stop him very well. And the question is, why did that happen? Well, it partly happened, I would argue, due to the Avatar Roku, a bit of an ethical lapse because of his personal relationship to that Fire Lord. The Fire Lord was somebody he grew up with. He's a member of the Fire Nation. And so therefore, when his friend is doing these things that are unethical, it's easy to kind of overlook it or give them more than an appropriate benefit of doubt. And so because of that sort of not thinking about the ethics of a situation, by not engaging with it well enough, it ultimately led to these problems that we see the series solving because of this mistake, this ethical lapse of someone. And again, it wasn't on purpose. It wasn't because Avatar Roku was a bad person. It was that this personal relationship blinded them to this significant concern, this growing issue that really they needed to be on top
of. And what's it like collaborating? Do you find that that makes the process of putting this kind of book together more difficult, or is it easier than if you were doing it all on your own?
For me, it's definitely easier to have a collaborator, especially because Gordon and I have worked on a number of different projects together. So we've had a lot of fun kind of working together and putting things out there. I think it's also, it makes the process easier because then, you know, you might have an idea about something and they, you know, your co-author can, you know, share with you that, oh, no, I think you're heading in the wrong direction. Maybe we need to redirect. So I think that's really, really helpful. And I think both Gordon and I generally like collaborating more than writing on our own necessarily. We both have young children. So having collaborators helps us to split up the work. And, you know, it also helps us to, you know, especially because if you're watching, you know, entire seasons of two television shows, in this case, Avatar The Last Airbender and The Legend of Korra, you might have missed something in an episode, or you might have missed something that, you know, your co-author is going to notice and say, hey, this isn't exactly how it went down. Maybe you want to clarify this. So it actually, in my view, makes the book better. And then you can do podcasts together later. So that's also fun.
Yeah. I do think, too, that it's nice on an accountability perspective. Because my greatest papers that I've never actually written are all things that I was doing on my own with no one else to be like, hey, we should do this. Now, I think with a book, it's a little more because you do, you know, sign a book contract and all that jazz. But it's always easier when you're working with someone to feel like, okay, well, I really need to work on that chapter. I need to do this, or I need to think about it. And it gives you, as Sai has said, someone to talk to about things. So if you hit a wall on a thing you're working on your own, it's kind of hard to know where to go. But if you've got a collaborator and you've got, you know, overlap, you know, you can talk to each other and figure out, okay, well, what about this aspect or that type of thing? You know, I agree with Sai too. Breaking up the work can help. Although I find for me, honestly, it just means instead of one project that I'm working on alone, it's like 4,000 projects I'm working with other people. So I don't think it decreases the workload overall. But it's a good theory, Sai. I just don't know whether it actually works for me that way.
I need that lie to continue so that I...
Oh, we need the lie. I agree with you.
So during this process of working together and collaborating, did any of your views on leadership shift during the process of writing this book? Or did you find yourself questioning things that you believe to be set in stone?
To me, honestly, ethics was a big thing with this book. Because one of the things that, you know, I was reading in the review articles was the idea of really that if you don't see a situation as an ethical situation, you just act on, you know, sort of your narrow self-interest in what's going on. And that's a really powerful thing to think about, and a very big problem, because a lot of times people will be focused on, this is going to make me money, or this is going to get me something I want. And if you don't think about the ethics related to it, it's not magically going to come up. You're just going to act in a way without doing that. Because I think people are often sort of discreetly looking at something as, this is ethical or not. You know, if this is an ethical situation or not, when every situation has ethical components, every situation we probably need to be thinking about that related to things like fairness. And so to me, that was one of the big things that working on the book more was, I think it's something that unconsciously I would, you know, think is true, and something if you brought it up, I'd agree with you. But really in looking at the ethics chapter and looking at that in Avatar The Last Airbender did make me think about really how much that's an issue. Like, we really need almost some type of warning to pop of like, hey, have you thought through the ethics of this situation before you make your choice? Because if we don't have that pop-up in our head or elsewhere, we're just going to act, and it might be unethical because we just didn't think of it in an ethics situation.
Yeah, so that's interesting. That's a really great question about, like, reframing. One thing that I think writing the book helped me think through that I hadn't really thought about very much, at least not as deeply, was about mentorship. And there's a very good example of mentorship in Avatar The Last Airbender between Uncle Iroh, who's a fan favorite character, and his nephew Zuko, who he tries to help him grow through trauma. He's, you know, Uncle Iroh is a wonderful mentor to him, but we learn, you know, there's a lot to be learned in that relationship about a failed mentoring relationship. And their you know, mentoring relationship, which we kind of think of as dysfunctional mentoring, it's defined when the relationship doesn't meet the needs of either the mentor or the mentee. And I, you know, in my memory of the show, I only thought about those positive elements of, you know, Uncle Iroh and Zuko's relationship. And I forgot about some of the negative elements of it, and how their, you know, that mentoring relationship, while it's good for the most part, it does have these dysfunctional elements to it. And it's important for people to recognize that even the best mentors can be in a relationship that's dysfunctional. It doesn't serve either the mentor or the mentee. And I think that's part of what makes Avatar: The Last Airbender such a good show and such a nuanced show, is that it can take, you know, a positive relationship and then turn it kind of negative and then find a redemption in that. And I think that's the other really interesting thing about the show that's helpful for, I think, leaders is, you know, very few characters are 100% good or 100% bad. People go on these arcs where they grow and change. And I think that's a really important lesson for many people in leader development, is that it takes time. You're going to have some stumbles, but overall, if you commit to it, you're going to grow and change and get better.
Gordon, you mentioned about the kind of huge amount of projects that you have on the horizon. But as far as working together is concerned, what's next?
So as is usually the case, there's about 4,000 various things in various stages of likelihood or not. You know, I think one thing Cy and I have been talking about for a while that might be next on the docket is looking a little bit more at Instagram and how leadership plays out through some of that. We did a paper looking at Twitter/X, whatever you want to call it, this week, and leadership. But I think kind of thinking about those online leaders, you know, the internet has a lot of influence on what we do. But we actually haven't looked at a lot of stuff in nearly the detail we need. So I think that's one of the ones I think we're finally going to get to that size. So just letting you know.
Yeah, that's definitely next on the docket. That's the next paper that I think we've got. And then we've got a couple of other, I think, science communication stuff, maybe something involving memes, that we're working on. No other books at this point, but who knows, that might change.
And just to wrap up, Gordon, I usually ask guests at the end of an episode a fairly difficult question, and that usually is around the one key takeaway from their book. But this time, I think I'll mix it up a little bit and ask you. We'll start with you, Cy, first, and Gordon, you can have a bit more time to think about it. It's a very difficult one, and I do apologize. If you had to choose one key piece of advice that you've learned or received about leadership through creating this book and maybe even the Marvel Cinematic Universe book as well, what's the killer piece of advice that you would offer to listeners?
The killer piece of advice? So, kill your leader. Oh, no, sorry. No, that's not the killer piece of advice. I actually think that, so as we're talking about the Avatar book, I'll answer this in two ways. One with a MCU answer in a bit, but I think that one of the best things that we can think about from the from our Avatar book, and we haven't really talked about this too much, but I think recognizing kind of the cross-cultural nature of leadership and a lot of leadership that happens now is, I think, extremely important. People are working in differently located teams, or you might be working with somebody from a different cultural background. And I think Avatar: The Last Airbender does a really good job of talking about respecting people's boundaries and, kind of trying your best to understand what the other individual's perspective is. And I think leading with empathy is a big part of Avatar: The Last Airbender. We see both Aang and Korra leading with empathy. And, that's the only way that they're going to be able to bring these four very different countries together to maintain that sort of balance. And I think it's a really powerful lesson that you can take away, is that if you're leading with empathy, if you're trying to understand other people, and if you are listening to those other people, whether it's in a mentoring relationship, whether it's as their team lead, whether it's as their CEO, that will serve you very, very well. And I think that's a pretty strong through line throughout the book. From the MCU, I think this isn't really a main lesson that I think anybody can take away, but something that Gordon and I discovered is, as we were talking about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, one of the things that we saw was that Black Widow might be the most underrated and, in fact, best leader in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And she follows a lot of those, the common themes that we see in female leadership, where she becomes a leader of the Avengers during like the worst time period, which is after Thanos wins and, you know, does the blip. And she's the one that keeps the ship going. And we see that over and over and over again with female leaders in the real world. So I think that's a really interesting and fun takeaway that, you know, I don't know if Disney and the heads at Marvel really want us to talk about that, but I think it's a really interesting finding.
So kind of two things that to me sound pretty simple, but I think are not appreciated enough. So leadership is about influence and it's about the long term. So what does that mean? Well, the first is I think sometimes we definitely act like if somebody's got a fancy title or they're famous, that people will listen. I think you can see lots of examples where that might not be true. And you can see a lot of examples in workplaces where people have bosses where nobody is listening to them or respecting them. They're doing what they need to stay employed, but not necessarily really being influenced the way they should. And so when you're a leader and when you're engaging in leadership, you really got to think about, okay, what am I? I'm not just telling people what to do. It really is, how do I help people to see this is the right thing for them to do? How do I get them to want to do this thing? How do I get them to sustain with that? And so if you're doing leadership things that aren't about influence, or whether in the short term or long term, I think you're probably doing it wrong. And that's important. The other part, I think, is the long term. And I think Avatar is actually a great example looking at the long term, which is you can succeed in, you know, forcing people to do stuff. You can have people essentially do something because they're threatened. You can keep people going beyond what their capacity is for a while. But in the long term, that all is very detrimental. And I think that that's something that we see in Avatar: The Last Airbender. We see that with the Fire Nation is, if you're in the Fire Nation, you might say, hey, things are great. The world being out of balance is actually good for us. But looking at the long-term view, that Fire Nation's behavior is hurting all the other nations, and it's ultimately hurting the sustainability, the success of the world as a whole. And the Fire Nation is part of that world. The world is in a worse place because of their selfish and negative behavior that doesn't look at the future. And so to me, that's a big problem in leadership, is doing things to get the stock up, or, you know, treating someone poorly because it gets the job done today, firing people without appropriate warning or care, taking the easy shortcut that helps in the short term, but in the long term is disastrous to morale, to your ability to get things done. And in fact, looking at the long view in the Avatar world, even beyond 100 years of the Fire Nation, we see in The Legend of Korra that kind of relationship between the avatars and the gods and all this isn't going the way it's supposed to. And it leads to problems because people have made bad choices, haven't worked to sort of fix that relationship. And so it's leading to very significant long-term issues. So when you're a leader, sometimes you've got to do the tough things today, but you need to think about what is the future? What are we building towards? And keeping people in mind for that vision of why this matters. It might be painful today, but it's going to be worth it for us. And we're going to keep doing well. We're going to keep succeeding if we do this. Not that, oh, we got to pop up the stock price tomorrow. We've got to get extra votes tomorrow. Because in the long term, that's not how people sustain. That's not how we make real impact. You build something on the short term, things can fall apart pretty quickly if we're not thinking in that direction.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. For more information on today's guests and for a transcript of the show, please visit our website. I'd like to thank our guests, Gordon Smith and Saya Islam, and the studio, This Is Distorted.